On April the 10th, 1970, the faculty of the School of Architecture and Planning at Illinois Tech met with the purpose of discussing the basic philosophy underlining the respective curricula of architecture and planning, and to continue, hopefully, in a series of discussion and work sessions on the contents of the courses which support that philosophy and the very problems which are designed to make that philosophy clear. Preceding the meeting, I read to the group from the Armour Institute of Technology catalog of 1939-40, in which was contained the first printed statement in that school's catalog by Mies van der Rohe on the architectural curriculum. It notes that the faculty at that time were Professors Mies van der Rohe, Ludwig Hilbersheimer, Walter Peterhans, and Mr. Krabel, who taught, was there before Mies came, teaching life drawing, Associate Professor Charles Dornbusch, Assistant Professors Rogers and Harper, and Instructor Mell. The curriculum of the architectural department is designed not only to equip the student with the knowledge and ability required for the professional practice of architecture, but also to give him a cultural education to enable him to make the right use of this knowledge and ability. Architecture, in its simplest forms, is concerned primarily with the useful, but it extends from the almost purely practical until, in its highest forms, it attains its fullest significance as pure art. This relationship leads to a curriculum which makes clear, step by step, what is possible in construction, what is necessary for use, and what is significant as art. This is accomplished in the curriculum by so interrelating the different fields of instruction that the student is always conscious of and is always working in the whole sphere of architecture in its fullest sense of designing a structure for a purpose, ordering it so that it attains significance as art, and working out the conception so that it may be realized in the executed building. At first, the courses are concentrated on training the student to draw, not only to master this technical means of expression, but also to train his eye and hand. Then courses are introduced designed to give the student a feeling for the expression of and relationship between form, proportion, structure, and materials, and to clarify his ideas concerning them. Next, the student will study the materials and construction of simple wood, stone, and brick buildings, and then the structural possibilities of steel and concrete. This work is studied in such a way that the significant relationship between the materials, the construction, and the architectural expression is made apparent. The knowledge of materials and construction leads to a study of function. The functions of the principal kinds of buildings are studied on the basis of an exact analysis. This analysis establishes wherein each architectural problem is distinguished from every other, wherein the real essence of each problem lies. After the essentials of each problem have been clearly established, buildings are designed whose conception and expression are based on these essentials. The study of function is carried beyond individual buildings into groups of buildings, and then into communities in the field of city planning, in order to demonstrate the interdependence of all building in relation to the city as an organic whole. The curriculum leads naturally from the study of the means with which one builds and the purposes for which one builds into the sphere of architecture as an art. This is the synthesis of the entire curriculum. The fundamentals of the art of architecture, the artistic principles, the means and their expression in the executed building. The student applies the principles in free creative architectural design and works his designs through in collaboration with the construction staff of the department. In conjunction with the curriculum, there is a clarification of the cultural situation today so that the student may learn to recognize the sustaining and compelling forces of his times and to comprehend the intellectual and spiritual environment in which he lives. The material, intellectual, and cultural aspects of our era are explored to see wherein they are similar to those of former epochs and wherein they differ from them. The buildings of the past are studied so that the student will acquire from their significance and greatness a sense for genuine architectural values, and because their dependence upon a specific historical situation must awaken in him an understanding for the necessity of his own architectural achievement. For the fuller accomplishment of these objects, a year of study in addition to the regular four-year program is recommended so that the student may have the opportunity to integrate his basic education. Then it goes on to say that Chicago possesses an architectural tradition from which have come the most significant American architects. Through their work, they have decisively influenced the development of contemporary architecture. And it speaks of the Art Institute and the Field Museums and the Burnham Library as being repositories of work that are accessible to the student. With this background, then, and this statement that Mies first made in the first catalog under his program, he came here in 1938, I asked the faculty to discuss the areas of their own concern, beginning with the freshman work. To speak briefly of the work that they do, how they feel it relates to the fundamental principles that I read to them from the catalog, how they feel it prepares the student to go to the next stage as they understand it of their work in the development and the program, and indeed how the student is prepared in courses preceding theirs. With the exception of Myron Goldsmith and Dr. Tritsis and Will Fire, the entire full-time faculty was present. Al Roop began the discussion of the freshman work.
I just made some notes with the intention of putting it together in better form, but what I had in mind was just to make a few brief statements about what the intentions of the course are, what we're trying to do, and then also very briefly how we go about accomplishing this. One of the first things the freshmen coming in is to try to get them oriented, try to get them used to a situation where they're expected to work on their own as mature individuals, not to be constantly guided in everything they do with assignments that are due on precise dates, which is usually the situation most of them come from in the high schools, to try to get them to think on their own, to think through the problem, to try to get them to begin to think about things they see, to take them on field trips to look at buildings, and then try to get them to express what they've seen. And really, it's almost like any child beginning to learn to talk or to walk. They look and they don't see. It's the type of thing that, well, you know, now that you've looked at it, what have you seen? And step by step, through discussions and things, you begin to get them to begin to realize certain things and begin to use their eyes. The problems we give them the basic the meat of the course is really to teach them the skill, the use of the tools, the learning of a graphic communication, clarification of ideas, and the clear presentation of these ideas in graphical means. We do this with problems. First of all, simple problems that they learn to use each one of the instruments. And then after as they're learning to use the instruments, learning to understand what the meaning of the line and the series of lines they're putting down, how these various combinations are symbolic for ideas and expressions, how different types of different types of drawings can clarify ideas. In other words, the various possibilities that are available and are used to communicate an idea that the student has to someone else who needs to understand this idea in the clearest possible means, and the number of ways that he can do this, and to not only be able to put it down, but to put it down clearly so it doesn't need to be explained any further than what is on the paper. In other words, that it is a form of communication that is entirely nonverbal, and that the necessity of learning to master this to express what they need to express.
How do you feel this interpreted as a basic training and indoctrination, so to speak? I hate that word, but you know what I mean, for the later development of the areas in our program.
Well, I think
the rest of the program.
I think it's pretty basic to any art form that to be able to communicate in that art form, you have to learn the basic tools of communication. You can't write unless you know the language. You can't play an instrument unless you know how to use the instrument. You have to understand all the possibilities of it. You have to understand the various means that can be used. I think that the most difficult part, I think, is to get them to realize that these aren't just exercises, that this is something much more basic than just a rote exercise that that you go through because someone thought it was a good idea for them to do it. We've been trying to work with various means of doing it, trying to get them to develop also a freehand technique, not only a hard line technique. In other words, not only a drafted technique for expression, but also working in a freehand means so they can put an idea down very quickly and clearly without very laboriously drawing everything very precisely, but to be able to sketch and sketch accurately, which is actually an entirely different skill. It takes an entirely different type of training. It takes just as much practice as the other does. And I think the rest of the instructors are well aware of this. This is something that we haven't been doing enough of, that most students can't really sketch accurately and in a freehand technique.
I'm curious about when you do this with students, and we haven't been doing it much, and it has been done periodically in the past. Do the students see a relationship with what they're doing with Nellie and what they did with Paul when he was living in the freehand drawing, when you ask them to make this application to something, let's say, more architectural, possibly?
Yeah, I did this in several different ways. One was apply a freehand technique into a very regimented type of drawing, which had to be drafted, and the other is to take in more or less of a problem that you consider a hard-line drafted technique and doing it freehand. So it was working both ways, trying to bring... One example was trying to bring the sketching from their life drawing class into use as sketching forms, trees, this sort of thing in a drawing. And the others I used was just having them sketch very simple details and try to sketch them accurately as they would see them. This used the not as a lettering exercise, but if there was a report to write, notebooks and this sort of thing, that they would practice their lettering and forming these different studies.
David, would you make some comments about the freshman work?
Well, I think the student of mine the day before yesterday said to me, he was trying to express an idea. I said, draw it. He couldn't draw it. Hard line. And I'd seen that from my class now in the fifth year, I don't know if they've forgotten how to draw or just what. And I can remember distinctly that I always felt that the student in the freshman year, along with these things of teaching them how to draw with instruments, I think we would be more responsible. I tried to be more responsible in acquainting this student with what he's doing and how it fits into the entire picture of the 5 years at IIT. And many of you who were around then, I think you may remember, I invited all of you to talk to the freshmen and speak to them and just kind of give them an idea. Sometimes I'd tell them things and it would be reinforced when he'd see something that was being done in the reflection or something was done in the fourth year or something was done later on. And I think that this, I felt, was rather important with the student. And I also felt that it was the responsibility in the freshman year to have this guy become acquainted with other architects, with other things going on, and somehow make him responsible in the end, responsive to these things. Now, the student, the same student that could not express himself with the drawing, and I recalled to him that, incidentally, fifth year now is the last year that I taught this freshman. And I said, well, you used to draw very well, you know, why don't you do it? He says, well, I've never had anyone require drawing out of me since, really. And he said that, well, at least no one stood over him and made him draw. So we began to talk about his development through the years here. He mentioned that when he was in the freshman year, some guy came over from the fourth year and talked to him about some very nice things on a board. And he felt that gee, I can hardly wait to get to try to do something like that. And he says, when I got to the fourth year, it was a totally different thing. You know, I still see the nice drawing, but somehow, you know, he wanted to do it as a freshman, but not, you know, when he got to the fourth year, things had changed. Now, I don't know what one has to do to bridge that kind of gap. And again, I feel that, Joe, you taught freshman too, you might have some idea on that. But I thought it was very, other than giving him this mechanical thing about drawing, and I think all of them understand that they have to do a drawing as well as they possibly can, you know, that's hardly a month's training for them. Now the other things that we gave them the rest of the year became developing technique, and I think one way or the other it can, you know, go many different ways. But I always felt, and the students did tell me later, that they felt that once someone had talked to them about visual training, once someone had talked to them about construction, because he sees that. And there are these little things that go through class, you know. A freshman, sophomores will come up to the freshman and says, gee, just wait till you get to start drawing these bricks. Well, the guy says, you know, what does that mean, drawing these bricks? I think once he's talked with somebody from the construction years, he begins to understand them a little better. And somehow, he begins to know that he's looking forward to getting to it, or getting by, whichever would be his aim. He gets to the point where he can start doing some of these things, putting some of these things together. So I thought the responsibility freshman year was, other than teaching him to do, and helping him to become aware of architecture and architects, what it meant, what architecture was at IIT.
Joe, do you have a comment to me?
Not really, but I think Alan sums it up quite well, what they should do. It's a matter of getting acquainted with something that, in many cases, they're very, very... it's foreign to them, and maybe we're not, maybe there's some new techniques now that should be incorporated which have not been used or were known, say, when I taught it 12, 15 years ago. We have a different method of, which is now practiced in offices, a different method of expressing a lot of things which was not known 10, 12 years ago. I often think about when I started this spinner, you know, that wasn't even invented when I taught. Freshman, we had to use the old crack sandpaper, but now they use the spinners and they use other methods. I'm wondering if we are covering some of these new techniques and expressions, also different types of leads. You use these different types of leads, the K leads, and the use of mylar rather than tracing paper, and use of various different types of inks, which are, you know, at one time when I taught it, we just had the India ink. Now you have various types of inks. Are you covering these things now in your course or not?
No.
I'm wondering if this should be incorporated. You know, it's the expression and the printing now, the methods of reproduction of prints is much different than it was 12, 15 years ago. See, I taught back in 1955, the first year that we used Crown Hall. Actually, that was the first night we taught in Crown Hall in 55. Many of these things weren't even known. The methods are quite a bit changed. And I'm wondering if we are staying with it. I only ask the question, I don't know.
Well, my feeling on that is that that's really insignificant. Any office you're going to build, go into, they're going to have a different standard of doing things, a different way. And if the student knows how to draft, you know, it's a matter of 5-10 minutes, maybe a day or so, you can master the new material. Whether you use the parallel rule or T-square, you know, is that really that important? What's the important thing? You know, what's the priority?
Well, I'd like to add a comment here, because I started in 39-40, and in regard to sharpening wooden pencils, we weren't allowed to use scotch tape. It was new, it was unrefined, it was sticky, it messed up the board if you didn't take it off soon enough. We had to use thumbtacks, you know? What I'd like to say is that the founders got with it pretty quick. I don't think thumbtacks lasted more than 3 years, but sharpening wooden pencils has gone on for more than a quarter of a century. And I think, you know, they should know how to sharpen a pencil, but I don't think they should be required to use it all semester. It has some parallel to scotch tape, which was very new in 1939 and not really tried, and maybe it was well to hold off for a year or two.
Whether you use a wood pencil or whether you use a mechanical pencil doesn't do anything about smearing that edge on your paper, whether it's gluing out from glue or whether you have a point on that. And I think one can do this either way. You know, I'm not advocating that you have to sharpen a wood pencil and use it all the time. I found it a good discipline, too. And I think in the freshman year, just as other disciplines are carried out through the curricula, I found it a good disciplinary tool, that if this guy learned how to put that point, and if every time he put that point down on that piece of paper, and it wasn't sharpening the pencil at all, that had nothing to do with it really. What it was that if he didn't do it properly, and the moment he set that down on the paper and broke it, he began to take care with how he prepared that point, how he used it. I think that was much more important than whether he used a mechanical pencil or a pencil. You couldn't do that. He never learned to draw that line. He would not learn to draw that line as swiftly if every time he had to do was just to do that. He could wear out a lid trying to get two lines the same way.
We have the time of element is concerned with. And now if this student, you know, these students today are very concerned about time. And I think this is what you're talking about, too, obviously.
Yeah, but there are two sides to that, too. One thing is, you know, you want them to understand what it takes to get a line. Right, if it comes easy, they may never understand. You know, to really refine it, the amount of work that it really takes. You want him to have a clean drawing. Well, to get a good line and a clean drawing, if you're sharpening your pencil with a razor blade and a sanding block, you have to learn pretty damn quick.
You know, it doesn't
matter. I think it can do just what you're saying. It can save a lot of time. Because it really points up the problem very graphically. I mean graphically. There's graphite all over the paper. You know, and in a day or two, you know, they don't have any problem anymore. Everything is sanitized.
Another thing I found there, too, is that once they learn to draw two lines exactly the same, you know, the discipline of the pencil point didn't make very much sense afterwards. I never did tell the students you couldn't use. It says you have to learn to draw two lines with this pencil. And if any of you, my students, might remember, I never did kill you if I caught you with a mechanical pencil after you learned how to draw. And many of them, you know, it's sort of like saying, while you're there, they're sharpening their pencil with their
wood pencil
or anything. But once they get those two lines, I think the discipline there, it's no longer useful if, you know, you're just going to sharpen pencils because they did it in 1939.
It's still a means.
It works two ways, though, too. For example, every student learns how to use a Lindholm, but some of them still can't see the difference between a Lindholm and a graphless line.
They can't even see the difference.
So, you know, on some you lose it.
Well, it's this judgment that's a part of the education.
I just wanted to interject one thing which has nothing to do with wood pencils or tags. Although the school has not had much of a tradition of worrying about large masses of reproduction. Most of the planning offices are usually in rather exotic colors, as most visual training teachers have commented on some of my points. And this presents an unusual technique in as much as there's frequently intermediaries involved. And I've, in my class, have been working on printing techniques where you have to go through a black and white intermediary to produce a color plate. And this has presented some difficulties for students in visualization. But I would tend to agree with Al on this other question, that by far, in a way, the most important thing is the ability of the student to have his hand do what his mind wants it to do. And this is, if the student is very good at doing the black and white drawings, generally he doesn't have too much trouble working through an intermediary, even though there may be several of them before you arrive at your final plate. And this may be something, I don't know that we should be teaching it, but I find it such a thing that's so often so screwed up in most offices. We just do it as a matter of course in most of the problems. We print something and you should generally work out color plates to go with it. So I just thought that might be. Everyone else was talking about Mylar, and this is something that most planning offices have the, not the necessity, but usually the government offices have to produce thousands of their land use map in 42 colors or 512 landscaping maps. You know, it's a slightly different problem than most of the architectural problems.
Well, that's my point too. You know, you can get so wrapped up in learning all the various techniques, of which, you know, by the time you're out of school, 25% of them won't be used anymore, and they'll have another 10% will be added to it. In the meantime, you haven't even learned the things that you should learn. And that's, you know,
principles.
What really constitutes a good drawing, not what you make it with.
Well, I really take up class time with this mapping problem as a technique. It's just, by the way, we ought to do this, and generally it's done. Like right now, we're working with Mr. Hovey's working with scribe code, which is something that has come into most planning offices a number of years ago. But I'm not going to teach it as a course. I mean, we'll just use it and they can see. It's a simple technique if you have enough
sense.
Yeah, and if a guy can draw a good line, he can recognize
that's
a good
right.
line on scribe
right.
code. This is the important thing. I think
that, exactly. Yeah,
if it's used more than just the discipline you're going through in the beginning, I think it's just, screaming out of the mountaintop. Because I think it really doesn't do you very much good just to hold on tradition for the sake of tradition. But I think that it has some real disciplinary meaning if the guy is going to get to a point faster. And I think that's a very good statement there, that by knowing what happens when you put that pencil down the wall to draw that line, and when you break it, you know what you have to go through. You learn how to draw that line very quickly. You begin to keep house, keep a clean house very quickly, you know, once you start slinging graphite all over the place. And then sometimes he learns to draw two lines just this long, exactly the same, and much shorter time than if he had this thing to put any point on his pencil as he's drawing. I think other than this scenario, I think sharpening
the pencil is a good pencil at all. Just besides, I found out that if I let the students practice, you know, that you give them a plate, they all want to practice on it first. They'll practice for weeks, never learn a thing. It's only when they decide that they're going to do a drawing that they begin to learn anything.
I don't allow them
to practice anything, you know. They start a drawing, you finish the drawing. You know, you make a mistake, you finish it anyway.
You start to learn when you go for broke. This diddling around in the interim doesn't do much. That is a peculiar problem, and especially in the early years. I think, I'm sorry, and I'm risking sidetracking the whole thing. One of the great problems, it seems to me, is precisely what the nature of what we're doing is. Now, to draw on Dietzkin 167A, has a certain quality in it. Now, if you switch the guy or just roll out a new sheet of post 1000, that's somewhat different. But I guarantee you, when you go to the kid finished Strathmore, same pencil, same kid, same drawing tools, something else happens. And out of it ought to be some perception that at very subtle levels, the material and the things make a very big difference.
Exactly. I think, you know, one can learn to draw on any kind of tracing paper. And you'll put that same pencil point down on this kit finish pattern when he finds out a different thing. Now, this is something that he's involved with the rest of the 4 years, and I think maybe we should stop having them draw on kid Skip Finnis Strathmore if no one else in the department is going to require someone to have a Strathmore board or something, you know, as a presentation material. Then I think maybe we might we should try to give whatever this media is he's working on in the freshman year, you know, if he's going to continue that through in school. And my own feeling, and I explained to the students when they brought in the other type, or different type of tracing paper, was that this 167A, whatever it was, had a good white opaqueness about it. You weren't interested in tracing, you were interested in doing a drawing that one could see, that could be reproducible, or whatever the case might be. And, you know, whether one used clear print, or whether one used a very transparent kind of material, it wasn't the important thing. The important thing that, you know, it's hard for him to judge or look at these things if everyone is different. The 167A was just a good, white, dense paper that he could use a good writing content that could take the punishment that he would have to draw on. And that was all, for no other reason.
I'd like to ask you, Al, and reason Willie's not here, but I found that when they come to fourth year, some students lose their drafting technique completely.
David.
Yeah. And they choose not to use it, at least.
Well, now, I have a suspicion that, they look at the series of plates required in freshman year as a goal, you know, coming up with the end product, rather than kind of picking up confidence in their hand as they move the pencil. And for example, if you allow them to erase or build two times, three times to come up with the required line weight, it might hurt their training. For example, if ruling pen caught a dust speck, and if you allow them to shave it with a razor blade, it may defeat the purpose of the whole plate.
I really don't think that that's the case. I was very careful to see that, you know, if you had to draw a line, you drew a line. If you had the ink, if you ruined it, you finished the plate and started over until you did the plate correctly. What I really think the problem there is that as one is learning other disciplines, if he's not required to continue putting that same thing in practice all the way through, he soon forgets, or at least it gets to the point where...
That's a little difficult to understand for me, you know. If guy mastered the drafting technique, there may be a degree of difference. Let's say he's required to produce a plate with his best skill sometimes, and for certain quicker assignments overnight, he might not have to put in his best. But the basic freshness of the line should be there. Sometimes it is totally lacking.
Yeah, all right.
Some students never can produce that.
Has to set a goal, then I think it's up to us to make sure a reasonable goal or a useful goal comes to that. I am absolutely against 16 assignments for 16 weeks, and every week a sheet of paper goes in and gets marks on it. It just doesn't work.
You know, this is part of the thing in trying to show the students what he's learning is really graphic communication, and that if he's ever going to, he does a drawing, and I ask him, you know, well, what was the problem? Well, the problem is such and so. Well, if someone didn't know what the problem was, would they be able to see it from your drawing? Well, starts out by explaining what it is. I said, I don't want to, you know, I want, don't want you to explain it to me. I want you to draw it so that I can understand it.
You know, I have to say this because I find one of the most ugly difficulties in working with the further years is their ability to criticize or to judge not only their own plight, but any of the work being done is really faulty. When criticism, or when what comes as criticism, complains about, I want to do it this way, he wants to do it that way, that is not a criticism, as far as I'm concerned. Can you judge on your own, about your own work, in fact, your own best critic? Do you perceive what's good, bad, clean, slopped up, inaccurate, less than clear? And that is a really serious blank. I wouldn't accuse it of being a fault, but it's a hole in what fourth and fifth year students are able to do.
Well, a student invariably asks, well, you know, what do you want? What do you think of it? And, you know, he'll keep on asking that if you tell him.
He'll constantly
rely on you to tell him, you know, when it's good, when it's right, when he has to do some more. And, you know, you simply can't be his judge.
How does that situation arise?
Well, the student will be drawing, and he said, well, you know, tell me.
Does he come with that?
I think he comes with it, yeah, because
he expects to be told.
It's been that way all the way through school. You know, he's told when it's right.
Process of learning.
He's told when it's, you know, when he's got the right answer. And you know that's the point. That's how he got to college. You know, he was given a problem. He worked on it until someone said, "That's right. You know, that's it."
Yeah, see, there's no answer in the back of the book now. There's no way that you can check that. You know, you work through the problem, you turn to the back of the book and say, well, all right, I got that one, I get a check. Now, it has to be something that he has to do. You know, he somehow you'd want him to say that this is the best I can do in this particular problem. But somehow he never gets to that point because he doesn't know. He has nothing to compare it to. He has no answer that he can measure. He has no Rosetta Stone to give him that.
Well, I think it's a responsibility to...
Yeah, well, one of the things I try to do is, you know, say, now you've got to decide for yourself. Now, how do you do it? You have a drawing here. Okay, try to make it better and then put the two of them up and look at it and see if it's better. And then do another one, and then put all 12 of them up, and then look at all 12 of them, and you know, see if you've made any progress from this one to that one.
See, Arthur, near the end of the say, second year, the beginning of the second year, you were able to tell pretty much about the guy's quality, his ability, you know, when it becomes a line that he can do, or what he's doing, the best he can do. It's very difficult to do that once he's starting drawing lines. You know, I don't know if it's the best line he can draw. I don't know if this is the best plate he can do. I don't know if this is the freshest, the crispest thing that he can do. And so he asks you, and you say, well, it's better. Can you do better? And you know, if he's conscientious, he might go and try again. But then once you get into other things where you're not learning technique anymore, you're actually solving problems. I think, generally, for the most part, first master, you are learning techniques. You start off with the triangle, the T-square, French curve, inks, you know, combinations.
Yeah, when we get into description,
that's
things,
right.
Then
once you get into problem solving, then I think it begins, you know, it's not so much that by that time you can tell if he's drawing his best line.
But, David, before that goes on, and I agree with that, I think it should be clear on the first afternoon that you as the teacher or me isn't going to see that work until, with some clear effort, that is the best that student can do. That may be very bad indeed compared to what you know it could be. But every time it is to be presented to himself as a finished plate, I'm satisfied, to the teacher, to his students, to the client, it's like, that is it, baby. That is as good as I can get it now. And that is a piece of what is not inculcated, obviously, by the fourth year. They do not see it in that terms. They want to know how many drawings, or what scale, or all sorts of things, but they never ask of themselves, How good should that be? And when they show me a piece of crap, you know, isn't it really a little insulting? Do you want yourself presented that way, at that low level? And that's a piece that has much reaction in it. I find that a little insulting. And I certainly think the students should. That kind of judgment about this is fine work, and whether you're proud of it in some inane way or not, we wouldn't understand by that. This is my work, and that was for last night as good as it could get. That's the perception of life that's loose.
Well, I think as one develops in the curriculum, I think emphasis is not the drawing. It has not. In the second and third year, it begins to not. The emphasis is not on the drawing. The emphasis on
but
is on the
in our conversation, solving. Really, the drawing part is the vehicle by which we're discussing something.
Of course. This, I think, ideally, this is what I think we would like to say. But I think, you know, if he's doing a perspective of his sophomore construction plate or something, I think, you know, the same emphasis is not placed upon that drawing as it was through the problem-solving technique. Now, how do you get him to put as much effort on that plate once he's solved all of these little things, everything to get up to this point of presenting it on the Strathmore? Now, if you can get him, if the same thing is from the freshman, what he's trying to do at the end and his problem solving, once he's learned technique, he's solving a problem, he's trying to present it in the best way he can. I think if this is carried through, I don't know why it should, by the time you get to the fourth year, say that the guy has lost all technique.
That is the central question of what the rubs are. I remember Peter Hans walking up to a plate and just saying, "That's awful." That was the end of it. That was the whole critique. Until it got decent enough in quality and cleanliness and organization, it wasn't even looked at.
But why should he even have to say it? You know,
were students then too, and they weren't all geniuses.
But the thing you're saying, it's always the same thing. He shouldn't even have to say it. It's awful. The student shouldn't even have put it up there. But we have students that always,
you bet.
Unless somebody's standing there cracking the whip, they'll do his little thing.
Maybe instead of saying, "What about the freshman year?" each one of us in any other year ought to have said, "That is a piece of crap. The lead is bad, the paper is wrinkled, forget it. You've discounted your chance to make something work because you've been so sloppy."
Well, why is it the freshman, stop this as soon as you get out of the, they wouldn't do this in the freshman year. They wouldn't give me a drawing that's like that.
It's a particular business of that year.
Because the freshman year is involved, with the drawing. And after they've got the drawing done, then the drawing is,
And it's not that alien. He's not going from just perfecting a technique to trying to solve a problem and present it. His whole second semester is solving problems and presenting them the best way he can.
I want to apologize for my remarks by admitting that I've been away for almost a year, and the disadvantage is that I'm a little out of touch with the immediate problem. He would be on sounder ground if we were all directing our attention to the state of architecture in the world today. And I think the students would sense this, and I hope if we go through this another time that we might start from the other end. Starting with the state of architecture, the problems that confront us in architecture, and what should they be doing in the fifth year, and then work down, and as we look at each course, say, how does this prepare them, not simply for the fifth year, but for the problems that they're likely to confront. I think that the idea that we are gardeners tending vegetables, or training vines.
The only two accurate.
Training vines to grow up in a certain way. We bend this limb, we prune that one off, we tie it off here, and we'll come out with an espalier pear tree against the wall. But this just...
somewhat flat and abstract.
It's just, has a fantastically negative effect on students.
who... Is that what we're doing?
It has a pretty flat
I'm exaggerating. Indeed, I'm exaggerating, but I'm trying to see it from the student's point of view. And I think if they felt that they were working with us in an effort for this school to make a substantial contribution to the profession of architecture, we wouldn't be so hung up if some of them fall by the wayside. But I really think the more we can consider the spirit and then test the techniques as they contribute to that spirit, and be willing to drop them in the... I was very disappointed to start in September of 1939 and discover that Peter Hans had just laid aside photography as the principal medium for visual training. I don't know, it must have been fantastically difficult in the Art Institute to set up a dark room and all that.
It was in the basement of Chapin.
Was it? Okay. Well, they did it for a year, and that year they switched to colored paper and other things like that. And I just think that, you know, we need that kind of flexibility, and a flexibility is an imperative if you've got your mind set on an outside goal. I think we should kind of take the spotlight off the student for a while and think about architecture, or at least examine the course content and our methods of teaching and the techniques we employ, by the extent to which they contribute to a solution to the whole architectural problems of our society.
Should we be setting the goals for the students? No, this is our only question.
No, for ourselves.
No, but the goals that you choose for yourself may have no consequence to your student whatsoever.
Well, then I'll leave.
No, you don't have to, but you should prepare him to set his own goals. And they may be entirely different than what yours are.
Oh, yeah, but that's no... That's no problem. I mean,
it is. That's the big problem.
I think Ogden really has a point there, and I think we shouldn't get hung up on little things. Whether we start at one end and go back, stating our goals and seeing what we should be doing to prepare that to that point. That's very good. I agree with you there, Ogden. But I think I think we were going to get around to that still, but I think what happens is that
maybe we should do the important
thing. It's still, drawing is still the basic communication.
Sure.
Now, we can have all of these theory, all other things that we can have, but I think if the guy still can't do a decent drawing, no matter what what else we do for him, to him, or with him,
something
makes any difference. So now I think the idea of getting down to the point of working with the student and let him feel that he's helping discover something is very important. And I'm sure this was the freshness when Mies first came here. I don't know. You were a student, few people. Is there? I know it must have been a very exciting thing to sit down and feel that you were working on something, discovering this with me. Or whatever Mies had made up in his mind to do, at least,
He wasn't figuring out exercises
Exactly. Now
he was, but he wasn't.
All right, exactly. I think he had something in mind, and in the meantime...
And he understood something.
Yeah, I think that is valid, and I think there are two ways to look at it. One is that you can do it the way it's always been done, and two, you can try to see where we are now, like you said, and see then, are any of these principles or basic things that you read in 1939, are any of those things are invalid? Are they now? And if we think about where we are and where we're going, I think those words could be very good from 2,000 years from now.
Is a very important point that has to be considered. But I think that's on another level, Ogden, which we have to get to eventually. But I think we have to ask ourselves, what are our objectives now? And are we able to meet those objectives? You know what I mean?
Let's get the ground rules.
Pardon me, I ask you what you see our objectives as being. Let's not pose a rhetorical question. What are they in your mind?
Well, this is going to open up a...
Well,
why wait?
Let's have it. We can diverge.
What our day-to-day problems are first, and then see where they lie, and then you can question whether all this is worth it, you know? All this effort is worth the objective we have set for ourselves. Maybe the objective is not valid anymore. Mm-hmm. It might be 20 years behind time.
Which means we didn't have much of a goal.
We're going to be faced, if we set new objectives, we're going to be faced with the necessity to find a way to meet those objectives. And it will be a teaching and communication problem. Mm-hmm.
Yes, in essence, I agree with what Ogden said, but I'd like to, before we leave freshman course, I'd like to say what we aspire to come out at the end of first year with students is some basic attitude toward the work, no room for sloppiness, and certain pride in what they do, you know, and this is lacking.
Is this because you think of the teaching process or because of something to do with the time?
Honestly, I don't know. But I'd like to find out. And I suspect that because they look at these six plates in first semester and four plates in second semester, they look at these as end products rather than just a vehicle for acquiring a certain confidence in what they do.
And in that sense, at the end of any given amount of work, the goals ought to be the same: to think, to see, to perceive, to make judgments, and to be critical and disciplined in it. The process is kind of interwoven with the discipline that allows you and in fact forces you or goads you to develop that.
Maybe go from that for the moment to what is involved in work that is indeed highly disciplined, and that's the minimal training work. And go ahead and speak of that.
Well, I kind of find it difficult to get into the details about, because I think I've been working with these details for a long time. And you know, I feel that I have to come back to this, not to the methods, but back to the statement in that first catalog, which is really very fine, and it was set up by Mies, Hilbersteiner, and Paternotte. When I started teaching, I worked with Paternotte on the problems, and I could see the direction or the idea behind those statements that were made in that first catalog. And as I got into teaching, I was able to hold to those things. There are some people here that were in those early classes, and I think they did. I think they understood them and they worked with them. But steadily, it's gotten to the point where I feel that I find it very difficult to be able to handle to maintain that. And so, in my mind, one questions is, what is the reason for this? And maybe it's me, maybe it's something else. And I think that that maybe it is something else. And that something else, I feel, is maybe a direction. Direction is lost. Now, this is, and maybe this is what the student senses, that there is no direction to the school. Problems that have not been coming up here with these, whether to use ink or change a problem. To go along with those lines, David Hovey is working completely alone with his section. And he had some ideas on what he wanted to try. Well, this is another, these are detailed problems, I think, within the setup of visual training. And I think he should speak about what his success is with that. I tried some new problems, too. But there's something missing. And those problems, you know, you say, well, maybe the students would be excited about these, about a new problem. They are for a moment. But when it gets down to these things that you talk about, you know, fine lines, you know, accepting only the best quality of things, as soon as you get into that aspect of the problem,
the push goes on.
It's like taking a sledgehammer to a piece of granite. It doesn't move. And you can say the thing that you said. I won't even look at that. That doesn't phase in one bit.
Well, I did get two new problems, one to each of the visual training classes. And I wasn't changing the idea behind the past visual training problems, because I think they're very good. But I did feel that, for example, in the life drawing course, over the years, there is a very rich variety of solutions or drawings that come out of the class, and that this could be possible in the visual training course. Now, at the same time in doing the problems, there is the added benefit of the student sensing that this is new for the instructor too, and therefore they, become a little bit more involved in the problems. But I sort of have the impression, I'm not sure about this, but I think the visual training courses are very important, and I think most of the students don't take them that seriously. I don't think we have long enough to work with them, and I think just the things that we're trying to get across in this course are extremely difficult today, because most people are very scientific in their approach, very practical. This society has not too much, doesn't place too much importance on beauty, and I think this somehow affects, you know, the students and the way they take the course, and also the way they look at all the other architectural problems that we give them.
But the kind of indifference, you mean?
Well, it's just, for example, one of the fifth year students the other day in my techniques class, what difference does a beautiful building make? So it's nice to look out of Crown Hall and see the trees. And the course was very nice, the way the mullions are set and so forth. But really, you know, what difference does it make?
What is the significance of beauty?
Pretty well agreed that from the day one that this school existed to today, we are teaching a fairly alien thing called an ethic and a value judgment. I just sat through a week of total insanity by professional planners. And we are alien. I not only don't make any bones about it, I think it's our only real reason to exist, to be another hack pile that belches out four kips of architect at the end of the year, or planners, or whatever. There's no big premise.
David, let me ask you, how do you answer these students when they pose a question like that?
Well,
I'll give you 20 minutes to think about it.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Then ask the hard
question. How does one counterfeit?
Well, I just try to throw out a few ideas, but you know,
a friend of mine was telling me he went the other day to the top of the Hancock building in the evening, and it was a beautiful view, and spent some time up there, and there were a lot of kids up there, and seemingly enjoying themselves and all, and so they went to leave, and they got in the elevator. The elevator operator said, this trip to the bottom takes 36 seconds. The one young kid turned the elevator up and he said, why?
Good kid. Like him.
The guy didn't know what to answer. I think the same thing is happening with all the students. We say, here's a beautiful building, and they say, why?
I think we're in big trouble talking about beautiful buildings.
Well, if we can't answer that, we're in trouble.
Why does the elevator take 36 seconds to go down?
Well, that's a ridiculous number.
You know what it means is you're not terribly interested in it. For a physicist, that would be an intriguing problem.
Well,
you
want to consider that an intriguing problem?
Yeah, but our intriguing problems are quite different. Let's take arguing about the
degree of
intelligence.
Well, that's not really knowledge about how materials come together, and common sense and reasonableness, and to make something beautiful, I think it has to be reasonable and rational, and certainly so we could start on the same basis and arrive at something beautiful. I don't think we ignore this.
Oh, certainly not. But it isn't the goal. It isn't to make a beautiful building.
Well,
it's to solve it where it's
well, sure. When we finally have mastered some of these disciplines, that we are in a position to deal with questions of beauty and in the realm of art, as he says. So it is decidedly part of it.
Well, art, this goes back to the thing that I started sense arguing with Ogden about. You know, Ogden said we should set goals. Each of us has goals for ourselves. We can't impose these same goals on the students. They won't accept them, and they shouldn't accept them.
By goals, we're not talking about personal goals. We're talking about the goal of architecture
and what is
the
that?
United States or
what is
the
that?
20th century.
What is that?
I'll give you my answer, Al. And I didn't mean to imply by my remark that I didn't think everybody didn't have such goals in mind.
But I don't think we share them.
I don't think we share them very fully and find out what common denominator there is among us or how we might learn from each other somewhat.
Well, this is the first time we've even sat down this way to consider it.
I think the, to say it all and to say nothing in one sentence, that architecture is the problem of arranging the physical environment to promote man's spiritual needs.
And physical.
No, that's just building.
That's engineering.
But you have architecture without food?
Well, okay.
That opens the door in town hall and gets
hot. Yeah, I stand corrected. I think that, you know, satisfying the physical needs
is automatic, certainly.
Approach the realm of art, if you speak of the art of cooking or the art of hospitality or some of these things, but they are not considered fine arts in ordinary vocabulary.
Look out.
But often there was a conference at the student chapter of the IA down in Champaign, and then a whole group of freshmen went down, and they listened to these speeches and these seminars, and very prominent architects sat up there on the stage and said, you know, that the architect can't possibly do all these problems. You know, he can only do this one little part, and he has to have these people and these people and these people.
Maybe more to me, not being an architect and not having taken many of the courses.
Yes, you
the
want
ideas,
to take
the ideas are going
philosophy.
Right, exactly. Yes. The ideas of balance, harmony, sound judgment, I think, are represented less clearly, let's say, in regional planning than they are in the city planning, but all of this is similar to the ones in architecture. And I have to agree with Mr. Takeuchi that when the students come into my class, which is a little bit later, many of them have no concept of this idea that there's more to it than just making it work a little bit better. And this bothers me. How do you develop this if that's the goal of teaching, which I think it is, to develop in a student this, I think some agreement on that, this concept within himself, as inculcated within himself, to make these judgments based on this rationale, this, if you must, philosophy of well-ordered environment in all its aspects. Once you get them in the fifth year and they don't understand it, to answer the question posed to Takeuchi and you, I don't know what I would tell them. Because what can you say after 5 years?
It's even worse than that. Having talked quite long to some of the fourth-year students, they have a pretty clear generalization or conception of what it is. And that, very crudely, is total chaos. Everything is screwed up. You've got your little pattern, baby. Okay. But there's 50 other little patterns, and as far as I can see, there's no differentiation. There's no ability to judge between your crappy little system and John Smith's crappy little system. You're just forcing me through this one. I find that highly unacceptable. However that is developed or fostered or allowed to exist, I find that's like, we might as well hold the funeral for that.
No, that's more and more students are arriving, at least when I see them, with that attitude. I was presented with the proposition that we vote on, which was a better environment recently. I find that the whole idea is abhorrent, you know. Yeah.
If we want to judge it on its merits, we'd ask everyone on the matter of opinion, we'd vote on it
more or less, rather than judge it on it.
Which do you like better, A or C?
Well, 57% A, so that's it. But this is an attitudinal problem that I'm starting to see, and I find it difficult to communicate with many students the way I would like to try and take a problem apart and talk about its parts and try and put them together. It's just,
they're willing to decide, but not judge. And decisions can be made very easily, especially in ignorance. If you're totally ignorant of three conditions, you can decide just as well in 1 second. There's no information, no input to allow you even to worry about it. If you begin to judge and to dig into what goes into those decisions, the consequences, the parameters, it gets tough, and it's not easy work. And I think in a great extent, we've allowed them to decide that thing. Okay, so you decided. What the hell is that? What are the consequences of it? I'm not nearly so interested in what they decided as what went into the system. All right, live with your decision now. Make the next step.
You held art until the end of...
No, he suggested it should be put off.
Yes, suggested.
Yeah.
Now, so through the course of all discussion and at the end, I hope we'll come up with the understanding of everybody's interpretation of what we consider to be the philosophy of the school. Why don't we go on?
Well,
I was about to pose on. Let's go to construction next. Sal, why don't you start?
I think, yeah.
The 2 years of it, you know.
Thank you. Well, the major step that one has to make after the freshman year, where one learns how to draw, is to introduce the idea of a building, you know, and how it's put together, and how the materials are the properties of materials, and the architectural language which has been developed for presenting to a contractor or a builder, whoever it is, how he should put the materials together. And that is really the first thing which one has to do as a practical problem is to get them to understand what a section is, how lines can be used to express the parts of a building, how you can read a drawing and understand what it means in reality. And at the same time, of course, one has to talk about the materials you use. And then the major problem comes is to, once they have the technique drawing a detail or have an idea of what that is, then to begin to get them to think about how a detail goes together. And this is a tremendous problem. Get them to actually to think and to work on a problem. And one of the I always put on the board this kind of series of steps which Caldwell had developed about drawing the known facts or even listing them on a piece of paper, and then seeing what the unknown facts are, what are the actual problems you have to solve, and then choosing the least unknown or the one which you have the best idea of, and making some kind of assumption about that, and then proceeding on all the way through until you have the detail solved completely. And then you look at it and see, well, is it really solved? Or are there things you ought to adjust and to consider not only on the structural aspects of it and the construction aspects of it, but the architectural implications of it? And of course, that's an extremely difficult problem. And I'm not sure how many people really grasp that really well in the first year of construction. I'm not sure how many you are really able to push into really thinking about architectural problems and not just going through the motions of it and making a drawing about it. One utilizes all kinds of devices. You actually walk around on the campus and look at the buildings. Again, it's amazing how little they see. They walk right by these things and they don't even see them. Although there are a few who are quite observant. I have in every class three or four people who are immediately on the lookout for these things. But on the major part of them have to be pushed of criticism. Of being able to criticize your own work. Really, looking at it objectively and asking, have I really actually solved all the problems, or have I just done what the teacher asked me to? And I find the interesting thing is that if a criticism is made of their work by another student, they're often more react much more to this than if I say this and this. So one of the techniques I've used, as an example, after they make a drawing of a detail, let's say a roof detail, and I'll make some comments about it, and then I take a sheet of yellow paper and I lay it over the drawing and I say, now here, you begin to draw this over, you begin to improve on this. And each one contributes a little bit to it. One says, oh, I can see that if we do this here and that there, then it will be better. At random locations in the student's career, it can occur as late as the fourth year.
Third. However, I would have to say that is a trouble, but that's the least of it.
Yeah.
As I have people in the fourth year that technically have grades for 3 years, and they don't know anything. Absolutely nothing. Zero.
You mean history?
History. Yeah. Totally.
Well, when I had it with Caldwell, he made it. He emphasized the construction aspect of the buildings and the architectural aspect too, and their cultural significance and all these things. And one was then able to have some relationship to what one was doing. You know, like bearing wall buildings, obviously, to bring up the questions which led to the development of Romanesque and then the Gothic. You know. Opening up the wall to get in more light. We have the same problem. We have to make openings in the wall. And all these things are have to be dealt with, but I can only give a kind of a superficial reference to these things in the construction plans. And then one goes on to from the development of a simple wood balloon frame building with stone foundation. We have, again, simple calculations of the structural members in the foundation. Again, we develop all the critical details with full-sized drawings. And then I have had them, for a number of years, make a very simple block model of the building and study in a very simple way the placement of the windows and the doors and the other elements. Then we have a final presentation of all details with, this time, a perspective drawing of the building frame, a more sophisticated kind of a problem. Section. In the third year, I have the students study small houses with structures of steel, concrete, brick, wood, and aluminum. And we study the basic properties of these materials and the techniques of joining and forming them. And then we develop the house and structures according to the nature of the materials. We make a comparative study of these different structures and their architectural implications. And we make quite detailed structural calculations. And we develop all the critical details with full-sized drawings again. We develop very simple floor plans, which are
basically related to the planning houses. We use some study models in the development of both the structure and the plan to have some awareness of these things in three dimensions. And then we have a final presentation of the building with drawings and a model. Again, on the basic idea here is to try and bring up these materials and to get a grasp of the architectural implications of them. What is the proportion of a steel building? What is the proportion of a concrete building? What is the proportion of brick? To see what is the how do they look? You know, what is the quality of these things? Study of larger scale buildings, usually for a school, in steel and in concrete, a repetitive bay structure. Again, we make quite detailed structural calculations. We have done some work with two-way structures using computer programs. By the way, as you may know, all the students now take a one-semester course in computers in the second semester. So they have the background accumulated by this time. And we make a comparative study the different structural solutions. Again, we develop all the critical details with full-sized drawings, and the final presentation is made with drawings and or a model. The structure in relation to architecture. How can the structure be the basis for an architectural expression?
What I tried to do, well, starting with the sophomore year, I tried to, as much as possible, kind of keep within what's been done in the past. But I tried to maybe enlarge upon it, try to carry it to a greater detail. For the individual to try and get the students more involved in the problems. The first semester, we worked on the brick building. And what I tried to do is solving the building more than just one way, but a number of possible solutions for it. Now, this was something that was brought out to me from some of the students, that they felt that there was just one way to do something, and they, or that this was in the past, everything came down to one way of doing it, and I tried to develop other solutions to it. Maybe not equal, completely solving it the same way, but having advantages and disadvantages. So this was kind of the point of view I took with this problem. So also try to carry on this, to develop in the student a sense of pride and quality in his work, so that he could, he or she could recognize that he was or she was making a contribution. And this involved doing Strathmores over and over until
student could really recognize that he could bring out a quality to the building or the presentation of it.
I'll try not to repeat anything that's been covered here. I would like to, I think the anybody who's teaching material construction is just very lucky because it's such a fascinating part of reality and something that you can take hold of. And we have very limited opportunity to put actual materials in students' hands, but if we can get a few bricks or pick up a 2x4 or something, it helps to make it a little less abstract. As one illustration, we were discussing the modulus of elasticity of wood, and I could see people were looking sleepy, and it's a hard concept to get a hold of anyway. And while I don't think they really understood it, there were some 2x4s lying down over there. I said, well, you know, maybe you could find out. Wood is not a constant or homogeneous material, but at least that's an example of wood. Set it up between two tables 100 inches apart or something like that. Let some guy of known weight sit on it. Somebody having measured how high it is off the floor, and then measure it while he's sitting on it. And then we'll get the deflection and figure out the section. And somewhere they came up with a figure for modulus of elasticity, which was reasonably close to what was in the book. And somehow this seemed like a very successful class in terms of whether people were, participating or really getting excited, whether that helped their understanding in the fifth year, I can't say. I've tried to include heavy timber construction. It's very time consuming, and maybe you shouldn't spend so much time on it. I think its virtue is that it was one of the great eras in wood construction. And incidentally, I regard everything we do as history. I'd like the students to feel that I was taking them with me to the frontier of my own understanding, which isn't a very long journey, but it takes a lot of guts to do that, because you don't know whether they'll respect you if you do. I don't tell the students that, because I would expect them to answer, well, if you're taking us to the frontier of your own understanding, how come we're doing the same house you did as a student 25 years ago? And then the only answer I can say is, well, the heavy timber building is the same too. These are all historical examples that we're studying. Nobody could afford to build this brick house, and nobody in his right mind would try to do the heavy timber one. The other virtue of the heavy timber one is that the structure was expressed very clearly. In fact, it was the principal architectural quality of that building. And the hope is that whatever structural systems they're working with in the fifth year would achieve that same quality. They shouldn't look anything like heavy timber buildings. The other thing is, I feel that I won't get anywhere with students. I wouldn't tell anybody else how to teach, but I won't get anywhere with them unless I try to treat them as adults. And so I've refrained from the dangerous analogy, you have to crawl before you walk, or any of those sort of things, because this turns them off. I also think they ought to do some work on their own, and I tried in the last few years to get them to do their own studies of materials. And this is a lot of work. I mean, a lot of work for the instructor, because they have to make an outline, the bibliography, and you've got to read it, and then they maybe write a paper and make a plate that illustrates graphically, so they can try to describe what they've learned about a material in its architectural uses, both graphically and in words. I also think that all the elements of our curriculum have to be carried on at every year, and that in the sophomore year, you have to be emphasizing drawing just as much as in the fifth year, and you can't ever feel that the job was done somewhere earlier. I ask him to draw a cross-section through the right angles to the longitudinal axis of a banana, and most of them don't know that the meat of the fruit is in three parts, and that the seeds align themselves up along those lines, and that the facets of the exterior of the banana are really shaped by the way it lies in the bunch, and not in its, some of them have five and some of them have seven sides. And all these guys, you know, have eaten bananas and never looked at them. And I don't mean this is a big part of construction, but, you know, when they get set up with
planning, I'm just going to basically repeat something I have said in a meeting to the students about a year ago. The idea of that planning course to me has not changed in 1 year. What I feel it should and must be, I still feel equally strong about it. First, I feel, again, the housing or planning course, as it is stated, is a link, I use it as a link in a continuation of an idea, of a thought that, according to the catalog, should generate from the freshman year through the fifth year. I look at housing basically at no more than adding